Exodus chapter 23, verse 6 tells us, Lo tateh mishpat evyoncha beribo, which can be translated as, you shall not seek to affect the verdict of a poor person in his litigation. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, episode 82, The Justice of Justice Scalia, part 2. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10 Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
In yesterday's podcast, we discussed the visit of Justice Antonin Scalia to Yeshiva University and the way in which the justice and his appearance at the school inspired a reflection regarding judges. Today we turn to another inspiration that emerged from that encounter between Justice Scalia and the faculty and students of Yeshiva. This inspiration is made manifest in a recent reflection this week by my incredible friend and colleague, Rabbi Daniel Feldman, who posted a short essay along with a fabulous photograph of him meeting Justice Scalia at Yeshiva. Rabbi Feldman writes about a matter of Jewish law that Scalia discovered that he found striking, fascinating. As Rabbi Feldman further notes, it comes from Rabbi Kahana, a Talmudic sage, who issues a striking statement that was later codified by Maimonides. Rabbi Kahana seems to say that in a capital case, if the Sanhedrin comes to a guilty verdict unanimously, then that is a sign that something is amiss, and that indeed the most severe punishment should not be administered. As Rabbi Feldman reflects in the essay, a link to which we have provided, this seems counterintuitive. Is not unanimity a sign of the manifest nature of the proof provided against the condemned criminal? Though I would interject for a moment to note that humorously, according to another article published on Chabad.org, Scalia said, humorously, quote, of course, it's a Jewish court. If everyone agrees, something is wrong. This is funny, but at the same time, the rule is ostensibly mystifying. Why is unanimity in a capital case a sign that something is amiss? A sign that, as Scalia, cited by Rabbi Feldman, put it, something is fishy. In his lengthy essay, Rabbi Feldman cites, among others, one interpretation which is worth noting for the purpose of our podcast today. According to this understanding, one which focuses on specific language in Maimonides' codification of Rabbi Kahana's principle, what is being discussed is not every unanimous case, but rather one in which there was a clear assumption of guilt by the judges from the very beginning. As Rabbi Feldman writes about this interpretation of Maimonides, quote, accordingly, the suggestion is made that he is not referring to a panel that voted unanimously after extensive debate. Their conclusion should, of course, be implemented. Rather, the reference is to a court in which every member had made up their minds in one direction before even commencing discussion about the matter. In that case, a just result is impossible. If, by contrast, the conclusion is reached unanimously after an open-minded process of debate, it is a superior accomplishment of justice. And Rabbi Feldman adds, in this interpretation, the rule is aimed at other cognitive shortcomings, including the dangers of confirmation bias. End quote. This is very interesting, and it is with this interpretation of the aspect of Jewish law that so seemed to interest Scalia that we can approach our mitzvah for the day, which, like yesterday's mitzvah, relates to matters jurisprudential. Exodus chapter 23, verse 6 tells us, Lo tateh mishpat evyoncha beribo, which can be translated as, you shall not seek to affect the verdict of a poor person in his litigation, meaning that a judge must not deliver a verdict that is sympathetic to the poorer person amongst the litigants if the law indicates otherwise. This, of course, is a mitzvah that makes manifest the biblical conception of equality and justice before the law. Rabbinic tradition, fascinatingly, gives us another application and interpretation of this verse, one that warns not only against sympathy, but which also seeks to ban bias. The scriptural sanction against prejudice, where one of the litigants is poor, the rabbis write, can also be interpreted as referring to a case where one of the individuals involved in the litigation is poor not in funds, but rather in virtue, when an immoral individual stands before the court. In that case, the judge may be tempted not to rule in favor of the virtuous person, but rather to give that litigant the negative verdict that the judge immediately might assume is deserved. This, too, is forbidden, for equality in a court case is a principle that is applied absolutely. Rich and poor, moral and immoral individuals. The prohibition, in other words, to build on the phrase Rabbi Feldman used, seeks to warn against confirmation bias. As the medieval codification of the mitzvot, known as the Book of Education, reflects, this mitzvah reminds us that we are not God. Judges may be tempted by the immoral nature of an individual that stands before them in court, but God has asked these judges to apply the law. Once, in reflecting on the plans of Providence, Justice Scalia described his own path toward his jurisprudential role. He said, quote, "Another thing I can tell you, with an anecdote or two to back it up, is that things do not work out the way you want, but the way God wants. And sometimes what seems to you a crushing disappointment may in fact be a great blessing. I won a Naval ROTC fellowship when I graduated from high school. It was very hard to get in those days. All I had to do to cash in on the fellowship was to be accepted at a college that had Naval ROTC. As it happened, the only college that did, which I was interested in attending, very interested in attending, was Princeton, and Princeton turned me down, a major disappointment. So I came to Georgetown instead, and I am sure I am a different person and a better person than I would have been if my will had been done. The next biggest disappointment in my life was the morning in Palo Alto, California. I was teaching at Stanford Law School when I received a phone call from the Attorney General informing me that of the two finalists whom he had interviewed for the post of Solicitor General, I had not been chosen. A really bad call on his part, I thought, and a bitter and unexpected disappointment for me. But had I become SG, I have little doubt that I would not be on the Supreme Court today. So pray for things, but accept what you are given. He knows better than you what is for your own good." End quote. God, of course, knows best, and God instructs the judge how to judge. That lies at the heart of our mitzvah for the day, and I thank Justice Scalia and Rabbi Feldman for further inspiring our reflection. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.